Good morning. Today is a joint religious education class for all ages, 4K to 8th grade children. After the story for all ages, the children will meet in the social hall with our special guest speakers, Dan Krill, Dave Cicero, and John Presby. The kids will have a chance to make some music and maybe a bit of noise. All high school youth will stay in the service today as there is no high school class scheduled. Today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics that you may have with you here today as we begin our service. Thank you.
To love life is to notice the wonders that abound, and to notice the wonders that abound is to be grounded here and now. And to be grounded here and now is the beginning of finding love for this life today. Please take a moment to say hello or introduce yourself to the people around you this morning.
Thank you.
Let this fire symbolize the divine spark of light embedded in all beings. May its flame lead us to greater knowledge and tolerance. May its warmth lead us to deeper love and compassion. And may its light lead us toward greater wisdom and understanding. Please rise, embody your spirit, and join in singing our opening hymn, number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath, found in the Gray Hymnal. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Heidi, and I am your worship associate at this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have some of the answers, and those who have none of the answers, and those who aren't sure they are asking the right questions at all. As a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in the social hall after the service. And while you are there, find out more about our church. We are glad that you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share today, would you please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you? And then I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story with Dan Kroll.
Good morning. The story is called Doo-Wop Pop by Ron Schotter. Well, they used to call him Snowman, but his real name is Mr. Cyril. He's old but cool. He cleans our school with a broom and a mop, and his sounds, he calls them doo-wop. In the oldie but goodie days, he was lead singer with the Icicles. He sang doo-wop, shabop, shabop, my baby. Tell me you, he says, we were smooth. People stopped to hear us sing, watch us move. Now when Dubop Pop sweeps, I do my hide and peek. I like to watch him. He takes one step forward and goes shaboom with his broom. He takes another step back and says shabop with his mop. Doo-wop-a-dop, he adds with a hop. That's why we call him Dubop Pop. Me, they call the Slipper, but my real name is Elijah Earl. I won't lie, I'm shy. While other kids are talking, I keep on walking. I slip away. In our school, I'm not alone. There are three or four of us like me, on their own. Under her head, Alicia hides more than her hair, and Jacob, he twitches when the other kids stare. Lewis likes to burrow his head in a book so no one can spot him or give him a look. Then there's Pam Pam. She's even shyer than I am. One day in the lunchroom, I'm sitting solo, eating my PB&J, when Doo-Wop Pop comes over, smiles, and says, "Hey." "I see you," he says, "always hiding, taking your notes. So take this down, one of my favorite quotes. It's no disgrace to show your face." I swallow some air along with some fear. When I finally look up, his face is near. I'm inches from the diamond that shines in his ear. Not long ago, I was just like you, on the edge of the world, didn't know what to do. Man, I was caught. Till one day, eating lunch, I thought, "Stop being the carrot that stays out of the soup. Dive in with the potatoes. Be part of the group." I don't speak. I just stare at my jeans. I'm not silly. I know what he means. Bebop a bold, Elijah Earl. Bebop a brave. Come a out of your cave, Doo-Wop Pop sings. Meet me here after school. I'll teach you some stuff. Before I say no, he's gone in a rush. At 3:10, school's out, and what can I say? My butterflies are fluttering in a really bad way. I'm asking myself, should I go or stay, when suddenly, good, all my carrots are here. Dive in, watch my feet, do what I do, follow the beat. Gonna teach you the moves, so step right, step left, cross over, now back. Lean forward, lean backward, let your fingers snap, again. I try, but can't do it, my feet are a twist. I'm a pretzel, not a dancer. I know soon I'll be dissed. But when I dare to take a peek at the others and their feet, I see that they're tangled too. Everyone's doing the best they can do. Shadoo-bop-a-lop, says Doo-Wop-Pop. You kids are the top, now stop. All you need now is music, your own special song. But aren't you going to teach it to us? Lewis asks softly, so we can sing along. Wrong. That's your job. Stop, look, and listen to the world. Catch the thing that makes you feel like you just have to sing. There's music in the air, inside, outside, everywhere. There's doo-wop, pop, bebop, hip-hop, rap, boogie-woogie, punk, funk, salsa, ska, jazz, and rock. Even Mr. J.S. Bach, and he's one cool dude. As for words, they fly among us like beautiful birds. But, I say, how can we, none of us, well, not even one of us has an instrument to play. Wella, 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 my doubting young fella. Doo-wop, pop, laughs. That's why we call it a cappella. The very next day, we start to meet, and like Mr. Cyril told us, we listen for the beat, for the music of our world, the click, click, clack of feet in the halls, the burst of laughter through the halls, the kids in the orchestra rehearsing on stage, the rattle of a turning page. We collect all kinds of sounds, the squawking talk of blackboard chalk, the thump-a-bump-bump of a basketball dribbling, even the soft sound of pencil scribbling. We hear papers folding, teachers scolding, tickety-tock of our classroom clock, a coin drops, flippity-plop-plop, we turn it into doo-wop. When we start singing together, we discover a treat. Alicia has rhythm feet. She can rappity-tap, keep track of the beat. Lewis sings high up. And when he lets go, he sings in what Mr. Cyril calls falsetto. Jacob, he's the best at singing bass. He sings so deep and low, there's nowhere lower he can go. As for Pam Pam, well, she sure can jam jam. We practice each and every day until one morning we hear Mr. Cyril say, "You've been working a lot. Time to hear what you've got. Let's hear how you fare." And he opens the door that leads to the stair. "In the stairwell?" we ask. "Steps? Walls? Tile?" We don't buy it. "For the echo," Mr. Cyril says. "Try it." "Okay," we say, but inside we're thinking, "No way." But when the sound of our song bounces back off the tile, we sound so good. We start to smile. "I knew you would," Mr. Cyril says. We sing, we do our moves, Mr. Cyril nods, he approves. I close my eyes, I hear the blend, each of us singing, each a new friend. One sings low, one sings sweet. When we sing together, we can't bebop a beat. I hear Mr. Cyril clapping, he sounds awfully loud. I open my eyes, surprise, there's a crowd. The door's wide open. Everyone can hear us. Our principal, teachers, even the other kids cheer us. We blush. "You're fans," Mr. Cyril says. "Just listen." His diamond eyes glisten. "My carrots, take a bow. We do and feel great. Wow." And now, wella, 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 this is how our story ends. The five of us, we've got new friends. Ooby-dooby-doop. We're an even larger singing group. And doo-wop pop, well, he's put away his broom and mop. Every day now after school, he teaches doo-wop. But the most amazing thing, one night we climbed on stage to sing. Were we scared? You bet. But we told ourselves, bebop-a brave, bebop-a bold. And though our knees shook and our palms were cold, let me tell you, we carrots, how we rock and rolled. All right, let's stay seated until the lantern bearer comes.
May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. Please help join the singing the children out before they're actually gone. The song is in order of service. For you shall go out in joy. Gratitude. Let's start with the people we love and those who love us. Thankful they are in our lives, obliging us to open our hearts. Let open hearts embrace the earth, the sea and soil and stars, blessed by bold beauty, the bounty of being. Then with hearts open to beauty, let us embrace the arts and the generation of learning, that we should have wisdom. Let what wisdom we have, wan and wanting, lead us to strive so the seventh generation hence can live more fully. It is in that work and that alone that we can express our thankful spirit. May we make it so. For the opening to make it so, let us be truly grateful. The morning offering will now be given and received, and the special collection is for Common Ground today.
Thank you.
thanks for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. One of the reasons we come together in community here is to share our laughter and our tears, and we do this in several ways. Before the service, you are always welcome to silently light a candle on the candle table, and during the service, we speak aloud, and then the worship associate, Heidi, will light candles for us today. So anyone who has a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand. The ushers will bring you a microphone. And I have a joy. My bees, my honeybees, survived the winter, and I'm super excited about that. So they were out flying yesterday.
Hi, it's Barb. A joy for this crazy weather. I'm lucky enough to live on Lac La Belle, and it looks like a giant slushy out there. And a concern that, once again, things are pretty warm.
Good morning, my name is Eric. SpaceX did another launch this morning, and it was a textbook perfect landing on Launch Pad 39A at Cape Canaveral, which is where Apollo lifted off from. We are now within 20 years of putting humans on Mars. It's pretty awesome.
Good morning, this is Alyssa. Joy, I made it through the kids' February break, and a joy and a concern. I started back to school this week.
And then we'll light one last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which not have been named here today.
Let us join in human weaving, in blending all the textures of our lives, spinning dreams toward of believing, magic power abides, weavers of the dream we share, wishing wishes few would dare. Ours a loom where all threads gather to dress the world with love. Join to weave a cloth of splendor, a festival of life's bright tapestry, with the touch of born and tender, as joyous as can be. Deepest threads of inner space, shared with care, can interlace, forming homespun of such beauty, they make all rainbows sigh.
this be a home for weaving. A gentle place as open as the palm. Leave some space for hopes conceiving. A space for quiet's calm. Celebrate the brightness here, even in dark nights of fear. We grow soft as light as sunshine, to robe the whole world's soul.
Messenger by Mary Oliver. My work is loving the world. Here the sunflowers, there the hummingbird, equal seekers of sweetness. Here the quickening yeast, there the blue plums, here the clam deep in the speckled sand. Are my boots old? Is my coat torn? I am no longer young and still not half perfect. Let me keep my mind on what matters, which is my work, which is mostly standing still and learning to be astonished. The Phoebe, the delphinium, the sheep in the pasture, and the pasture, which is mostly rejoicing since all the ingredients are here. Which is gratitude to be given a mind and a heart and these body clothes, a mouth with which to give shouts of joy to the moth and the wren, to the sleepy dug-up clam. Tell them all over and over how it is that we live forever. Here ends the first reading.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 1029, Love Knocks and Waits for Us to Hear, found in the Teal Hymnal.
Waits for us to hear through open and in part.
These words are by Joy Harjo, a Native American Creek poet and jazz musician. And we'll lead into a moment of silent thought and meditation or spirit of prayer. This morning, I pray for my enemies. And whom do I call my enemy? An enemy must be worthy of engagement. I turn in the direction of the sun and keep walking. It's the heart that asks the question, not my furious mind. The heart is the smaller cousin of the sun. It sees and knows everything. It hears the gnashing, even as it hears the blessing. The door to the mind should open only from the heart. An enemy who gets in risks the danger of becoming a friend.
Monet's Water Lilies by Robert Hayden. Today, as the news from Selma and Saigon poisons the air like fallout, I come again to see the serene, great picture that I love and flames disfigured once, and efficient evil may yet destroy. Here, space and time exist in light. The eye, like the eye of faith, believes. The seen, the known, dissolve in iridescence, become elusive flesh of light that was not, was, forever is. Oh, light beheld as through refracting tears. Here is the aura of that world each of us has lost. Here is the shadow of its joy. And here ends the second reading.
This is not the sermon I set out to write, but here it is. Once upon a time, this is what I believed. There is no difficulty that enough love will not conquer, no disease that enough love will not heal, no door that enough love will not open, no gulf that enough love will not bridge, no wall that enough love will not throw down, no sin that enough love will not redeem. It matters no difference how deeply seated may be the trouble, how hopeless the outlook, how muddled the tangle, how great the mistake. A sufficient realization of love will dissolve it all. If only you could love enough, you would be the happiest and most powerful being in the world. I found these words by Emmett Fox collected in a little book called The Language of Love, which I acquired when I was 16. Back then, I had no idea who Emmett Fox was, but that didn't matter. The words were good, and I believed in them with all the fervent idealism of my youth. As a credo, the whole thing seemed pure and simple. It covered everything I thought anyone would ever encounter going through life. If only everyone could love enough, all the big problems, be sure to always capitalize the B and the P when I say this, in your mind. All the big problems of the world could be resolved. All the things idealistic teenagers of the late 1970s discussed around campfires during church youth retreats. You know, now capitalize all of these too. World peace, especially between the Irish and Irish Protestants and Catholics. Ending world hunger, ending poverty, the energy crisis, stopping pollution, and curing cancer. All the things that loomed large and distressing in my growing awareness of the world, but were mostly remote for my stable, two-parent, middle-class life in 97% white Waukesha, Wisconsin. Away from the campfire, I didn't know very many other idealists. I was a weird kid who spent my study period in the library hand-copying vegetarian recipes from cookbooks, or reading about the uses of native plants, and my lunch hour in the art room throwing pots, and that's art jargon for making them, not breaking them. I preferred spending Friday nights listening to records on headphones to going to football games. I preferred wandering through the woods to shopping at the mall. As soon as it warmed up in spring, I kicked off my shoes to walk home from school barefoot, treading through puddles still rimmed with ice. When it got warmer, I sat out on the school lawn writing in my journal, and not for a class assignment. That was weird. My closest friend in 10th and 11th grade, the first real-life atheist I had ever met, dubbed me Mrs. Thoreau after we read Walden in English class. We bonded over our shared taste in album rock and our cynicism about the mess religion and politics had made of the world so far. As we saw it, every new paragraph in our U.S. history textbook chronicled another war, another invasion, another act of destruction, further proof that power corrupts. Lacking power ourselves, we were still relatively uncorrupted, of course. It gratified my ego to be linked, even if only in the mind of one other person, with Thoreau. When the question, what are you going to do after high school came up, as of course it always does for you when you're in high school, I was ready with a curmudgeonly answer worthy of Henry David himself. Become a hermit. It was not that I enjoyed my own company so much, but that other people were so annoying and hard to talk to, especially when I tried to bring up the things I cared about. Adults, of course, saw it as their duty to set me straight about reality, which I refused to believe in, capital R reality, of course. But almost anyone else with a strong opposing viewpoint could take me to pieces in a matter of seconds. Becoming tearful weakened my argument even more. And anyway, the time I spent alone was not so much in my own company as the company of pines and oaks and birds and grasses and running streams, you know, so on. I was a romantic cynic. I was in the company of songwriters and musicians. I was in the company of people who wrote passionately about things I was curious about, people who created interesting fictional worlds. I was happily occupied, learning to recognize and name and befriend all these wondrous things. But since I had to do something after high school and becoming a hermit was not an option, I did the next best thing and enrolled in college as a perpetually undecided major. None of the career options that were available perfectly fit my interests or my hazy vision of how I might be of service in the world while also being happy. Even though I was cynical, I still cared about the big problems of the world. But now I understood how ridiculous their scope was, how immense and intractable they were. Too many people who were way smarter and way more imaginative than me had dedicated their whole lives to the big problems without much lasting effect. The world was full of gaping wounds. And as quickly as some people worked to close them, other people were only too eager to rip them open again. What was wrong with people? There was so much loose talk about love in mainstream culture, but very little evidence of it in people's behavior. Plus, I'd soon found out in my personal relationships that love was far from being a magical elixir that could unmuddle the other person's tangles or bridge even minor gaps of understanding. The love I thought I needed to unmuddle my own tangles also seemed in short supply. After 5.5 years, I surrendered and took a degree in the subject I had the most credits in. I put my diploma in a drawer and shortly thereafter took up the work, the task of raising children, which occupied me for 20 more years. During those years, I tried to live out my values through the things I taught them, how I spent time and money. I pulled wages from a bunch of odd jobs. We joined this church. I volunteered. The 20 years went by in a flash. Just wait. You who have young children. My children were out the door, living their own lives, and the question, now what, had come around again. I was suddenly old and nowhere near half perfect halfway into my life. Not even one quarter perfect. And the world was in pretty much the same state. The same old big problems plus a bunch of new ones. Not a slim fraction of perfect. Several zeros to the right of the decimal point perfect. And I was just as clueless as ever about any kind of work I could put my heart into. Come to think of it, I hadn't checked in with my heart in a long time. Was it still beating? A while back, I had the opportunity to see Monet's water lilies at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. Has anyone else seen it there? So it's made up of several large panels that hang in their own alcove. And the alcove is bigger than the space back here. The panels are huge. And there are benches in the alcove, so you can sit there and be more or less surrounded by this painting. The flowers are larger than life. And apparently Monet intended it, designed it this way. So it's really striking if you've only ever seen the water lilies on an umbrella or a notebook cover. And especially because coming through the museum the way we went through, we also saw Van Gogh's Starry Night, which is about the size of you see it when you see it in a poster. And then you come on water lilies, and they're huge. So I encountered Robert Hayden's poem some years later. The first time I read it, I burst into tears. So this is some bothersome occurrence that's been happening to me for a while now. It plagues me. It's not unusual. I don't like to admit it because it seems sentimental, but it's part of the story. So I've learned that when that happens, it usually signifies that some important truth is at hand. Even if it's not always glaringly obvious to me in the moment what it is. So I penciled a star next to the title, and I underlined, O light, beheld us through refracted tears. Sometimes I revisit a poem that I've starred like that, and I wonder what the heck I ever saw in it. But this poem haunted me, in this particular line from this poem. At first, I thought it had to do with the potential for heartbreak in caring deeply about something. But that seemed to have more to do with loss, which didn't quite fit. So I puzzled over this and searched my memory of the painting for clues. And one night, just as my head hit the pillow, I suddenly knew what it was. It was the juxtaposition of beauty and suffering in the poem. The serene great picture, side by side with the images of violence evoked by Selma and Saigon. All you had to do was change the names to ones from any other given day in any other given decade, and you had those same old sorrowful big problems again. But at last, I understood the reason for my endless floundering. I'd never been able to come to terms with this world in which beauty and suffering exist side by side, particularly when most of the suffering is perpetrated by one human being on another. My joy, so long ago, had been in all the things that were beautiful to me, but at some point, I'd stopped allowing myself to love them. I was afraid not so much of losing them, but that I did not deserve them somehow. Maybe because so many other people in the world were less fortunate than me, or maybe for some other convoluted reason that I don't understand yet. This is still the forming edge of a new awareness. But even before this, I was already sitting uncomfortably with some other unlovely truths about myself. First, how mindlessly I fall into us versus them thinking. Second, all the stereotypes I've harbored and never bothered to examine because they were to do with people whose behavior I blamed for all the big problems, or people who, in my judgment, only cared about things I thought were either wrong or unimportant. I'd always thought of myself as a person on the right side of all the important things in life, as if that meant I was loving. And look what it had done to me. I was shocked by how disconnected my mind and heart had become. And worse, so many of my actions were motivated by fear. Poet W.S. Merwin says, I needed my mistakes in their own order to get me here. Folk singer Carrie Newcomer puts it this way. What would I change if the choice were mine? I was doing the best I knew at the time. Was I? It's not my usual habit of mind to think so. But something inside me had started to shift. In her book, Rising Strong, Brené Brown says the most compassionate people, the ones she calls wholehearted, believe that most people are doing the best they can most of the time, including themselves. The ones who don't believe this are the perfectionists and the purists, the people who hold themselves and others to impossible standards. Perfectionists say, I know I'm not doing my best, so of course no one else is. Wholehearted people say, well, all I know for sure is that my life is better when I assume other people are doing their best. It keeps me out of judgment and lets me focus on what is, not what should or could be. It takes courage and patience to hold open a judgment-free space for ourselves and other people. But the inner work of changing our own hearts is where the work of loving the world begins. Standing still, learning to be astonished, is nothing more than this, stopping to pay attention, noticing what we see, noticing what we hear, and noticing what we feel. We don't have to understand it right away, only trust that we will, in time, learn to identify life-giving responses and solutions for the difficulties we encounter. Love, I'm coming to believe, is less a feeling, less an ideal, and less even a direct action than a way of being present. Or perhaps simply it is being present, fully present. Whether we're talking about being present to our experiences and emotions or being fully present to another person, when our heart and mind and senses, including our sense of wonder, is engaged, we can better feel our connection to things that are larger than us. We can better feel our kinship with other beings. In being present to our gratitude, we acknowledge the sufficiency of our own lives and increase our capacity for generosity. In rejoicing, we find a voice to witness for all that is good in this world and all that still needs healing. To make this world a better place, we must make every moment a better moment by inhabiting it with our whole hearts. The path I want to carve through life is one where I'm motivated by love, not fear, in everything I do. When I pick up trash, when I call my senator, I want to be motivated by love of something rather than anger or fear. Yes, feel the fear, feel the anger, don't deny it, but move with love. I think, or does it make a difference if the results are the same? I think it does. For my soul, for my spirit, call it whatever. To live this way, I must be clear about what I love. I must claim it. We often speak of the imperfections of the world in general terms, those things we can't control, like the weather or a traffic jam. We say the world is imperfect because it is made up of imperfect people, and then we cite our quirks, crooked nose, big feet, always being late. I think the real imperfection of this world comes from the fact that we all love imperfectly, and we find it difficult to forgive ourselves and each other for that. If most people are really doing the best they can most of the time, is this the best world we can expect to have? Maybe so, at least for now. Does it mean letting people trample all over other people's rights or never holding them accountable for what they do or never expecting them to grow? Brené Brown says absolutely not. The most compassionate people, she found in her research, also have the most well-defined and well-respected boundaries. Compassionate people know where and when to draw lines. And in doing so, they keep themselves free of resentment and self-righteousness. Resentment and self-righteousness are our true enemies, because if we're not careful, they fester into hate. And none of us is exempt from that possibility. I've kept that little book, The Language of Love, on my bookshelf all these years without questioning why. I almost never looked into it. I can only think that I held on to it in an effort to hold on to something I knew I'd lost about myself and hope to recover one day, like a message from younger me to someday me. And look how handy it came in today. At 16, I was leaving behind my childhood, a time for the most part before I had any notions of dividing people into us versus them, a time when I still believed the whole world was worthy of love. When I was a child, meanness confused me. Strangely, I noticed the feeling I have now about meanness is closer to confusion than the fear or anger I used to feel. It's as if I've regained my beginner's mind in some way. Emmett Fox, as it turns out, was a New Thought spiritual leader of the early 20th century. And as you might expect nowadays, there's a whole website devoted to his teachings and writings. I think those words that I found so inspiring in my teens are still relevant and true. But that comprehensive list of all the things love has the power to bring about now seems overly detailed, like it's trying too hard to cover everything. And it's so relentlessly positive that it doesn't address the risks, the pitfalls we can tumble into if we don't watch out. So now I turn to Rumi for some butt-kicking straight talk. Gamble everything for love if you are a true human being. If not, leave this gathering. Half-heartedness doesn't reach into majesty. You set out to find God, but then you keep stopping for long periods at mean-spirited roadhouses. No, mean-spirited roadhouses are not good places to hang out. I don't want to hang out there. If I look beneath my fear and anger to find what I love, there's a chance I'll have no excuse to stoke my rage into an inferno of pleasing dimensions. If I listen closely and deeply to someone without interrupting, there's a chance I won't get to air my own views right then. If I listen closely and deeply to someone who has a challenging message for me about my own behavior, there's a chance I might have to adjust my self-image if I find a hint of truth in what they say. If I trust that everyone, even me, is doing the best they can, there's a chance I might have to consider a more charitable explanation for someone's behavior, or move on from a situation I can never change. There's a chance that even if I give all I can possibly give to protect something I love, efficient evil may yet destroy it, and that's heartbreaking. If we gamble, there's a chance we'll never gain the outcome we want. But there's also the chance that we might learn something about ourselves that will help us become even more loving, empathetic, and compassionate. Are you looking for work? Have you ever considered becoming a professional gambler for love? Thanks for listening. I think we have time for a polylog if anybody wants something they want to share.
It's Barb. In my childhood, I had a wonderful family, but I had two men in my life who really inspired me. One was my grandfather, who lived with us, and the other was my father. And my dad had this saying, do the best you can with what you've got. These words have guided my whole life.
Thanks, Christy. I've been a UU for a really, really long time. And one of the things that I used to rile at was, we say we're here searching for truth and meaning, and often it felt like we got distracted into out there and so many other things, but you really exemplified the search for truth and meaning, and I so appreciate that. And I struggle with we're doing the best we can, because it really is quite judgmental. I loved your definition of just being there, present in the moment, and I think that's a real key.
Thanks, Christy. This reminds me of the workshop that St. Vinny's put on yesterday here at church about understanding poverty and the constructs around that. And, you know, when you look at people doing the best that they can and people judging others, if you understand, you know, a little bit more about, you know, where they're coming from, it's easy to really say they're doing the best they can. really great workshop.
Hi, I'm Tom. I'm going to become a member as soon as I sign the papers. Everything you've just... Oh, first of all, you need to understand that you're a rock star. So when you get back home, look in the mirror and say, I'm a rock star. Because every time the congregation and the choir sings out of this hymnal, Singing the Journey, we're singing about everything you've just said.
The flame is extinguished, but not our hope for the future. Our courage in the face of troubling times, or the love we share for our world. Please rise, embody your spirit, and join in singing our closing hymn. Number 299, Make Channels for the Streams of Love, found in the Gray Hymnal.
Closing words are from Langston Hughes. Out of love, no regrets, though the goodness be wasted forever. Out of love, no regrets, though the return be never. Go in peace.